for anybody who's listening, please don't buy into the breakdown. That's all I want to say. We
Amen.
Have to go through this. It's yep. a necessary part of the healing. But I am beyond hopeful for the new world that we're all in the midst of creating. And you guys, what you guys are doing, oh, I was so excited to be on this today because I love what you're doing. I so love it. And
hi, this is Clay Boykin, and I am in search of the new compassionate male. Today, my producer, Dennis Tardon, and I had the opportunity to visit with writer, author, actor, healer, and coach, Ella Newhouse. All I can say is, wow. Here's that conversation.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and we are in search of the new compassionate male. I am the producer. I'm here with Clay Boykin. Hi, Clay, the founder.
Hey, Dennis, how you doing?
Today, we have the magnificent Ellen Newhouse as our guest today. How did you two meet?
You know, I was looking back in my records, and it was July of 2017, and somebody connected us, and we had a conversation, and we said, you know, let's get your people and my people together, and they'll set something up, and we'll talk. So now, 3 years later, here we are.
Finally, we get to talk.
But you were going down at the time to L.A., I think, and you were working on a one-person,
one-woman show. Yes.
One-woman show.
And that's, wow. Oh my gosh. That's right. So I was just in the beginning of that.
Uh-huh.
And we finally got it going. Well, we've been working on it for 3 years. And all last year in 2019, I have been performing the show, which I never intended to perform it. I thought she was writing it for somebody else to perform.
Yes.
So, and so we workshopped it in the beginning of 2019. We opened it in LA in some month of 2019 that I can no longer remember. And then we got invited to New York to open on Theater Row, you guys, June 16th.
Wow.
And COVID hit, but it's okay. It's so much good for me has come out of COVID time. And I, this time has been such a rich time for me. And so all is well. We will open when the time is right. That much I do know. But I'm in the midst of writing a new show that I am so excited about. Oh, my God.
Well, let's see. You've written shows. You got books out. You're working on another two books. You know, what are you doing in the afternoons?
I know, right? I say to people, this is my downtime, but it really has felt that way. I know in looking at what you guys have been doing that in a way, I don't know how you feel, but don't you feel like this has been a call to go deeper?
Oh my, yes.
Don't you think?
I've spent, sun up, I'm on the back patio. Yeah. Through the heat of the day, sundown, I come in. There's two times in the day, sun up and sundown.
Yeah.
And it is such a gift. Mm-hmm. To be able to do that. If I'd been on the road again this year, I would have.
So I mean,
it is.
Yeah. And it's so interesting watching what you guys have been doing. And I have to say, I want to thank you for inviting me because I feel like it's, you know, I see who you've been interviewing and I hear the conversations. And I was telling a friend about what we were going to be doing today. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, why are they having you? It's about men. And I said, well, A, thank you.
Hello.
I know, thank you. And I thought it was a really beautiful response because I thought, you know, this is part of the problem, right? It's part of the dysfunction in that it's man versus woman.
Yep.
And as long as we stay in that paradigm, we cannot heal, neither women nor men. Yeah. And, you know, I've been really thinking a lot about how do we heal as both women and men, because it's very different. And so I'm so glad you have the men's groups going.
Yeah.
Because I cannot do what you can do as a man. I cannot speak for a man. And often this is a big problem in my practice because at some point I need some place to send my men to. And I'm always stuck. because there's a lack of really, really amazing male leadership.
But we don't trust each other. Us guys don't trust each other. You know, I can't go there with another guy.
I know.
Yeah, you know, that's the failing right there.
And we didn't have that as a model as we growing were growing up. Right. I'm 72.
Mm-hmm. I'm 66.
And you yep. are? Do you share your age?
Oh, I'm 61.
61. Yes. Good. So we have in general this time that we were growing as we were growing up, mm-hmm. and so when I was growing up, there were. The stereotypes were so strong in South yeah. Texas as being mm-hmm. part of what we were that we were not able to be open enough to be able to share us in full spectrum as men. Mm-hmm. It was no different from women. Mm-hmm. Women had the stereotypes of the secretary, teacher, nurse, mm-hmm. housewife. As part of what we were growing up, starting to change in Clay, starting to change in yours at the beginning of feminism as we were going. So here we are in 2020. Mm-hmm. Lots of things have been loosened, but we still have those same internal boundaries mm-hmm. that we're looking to lower so that we can show up the way we are.
Yeah, so... What I find amazing, because I get to work with people across the spectrum from mid-20s to mid-70s.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And what I love, I'm so blessed to work with so many young men. And I have to tell you, they are so much more conscious. They're so much more awoke than, you know, I'm sorry to say men in your generation in the mm-hmm. 70s.
Don't be sorry. And, that is the mission. That's the yeah. feature and not the bug. That's yeah. why this is needed.
Yeah. Right. But the sad news is they need leadership. Yeah. They need other men to show them the way. And what I find interesting, as maybe you know or don't know, is that within everybody, just in the principle, the divine feminine is rising.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
And as a principle, yin affects yang. Right? Mm-hmm. From Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know my background, but I...
Yes. Hold,
okay. So when I think about that, I think, wow, in every single person, the energy yep. is arising. The divine feminine is arising. And as that rises, as the yin is rising, it affects the yang.
Mm-hmm.
So the gift and the curse is the divine feminine is rising, which as it speaks to the masculine, the yang, the yang cannot stay the same.
Mm-mm.
And yet there's not an understanding, and that's why I love what you're writing about, Clay, because there's not an understanding of now how do I be?
Right.
Now who am I? If the old rules don't apply, who am I today? And what does that mean
yeah,
for
yeah.
me as a man? And what does that mean for me as a woman? And what does that mean for us as a country?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean for us as a nation? And what does that mean for us as a world?
Right. Yes.
God, yes. Alan, that is so beautiful. Clay, that is what yeah. I love about this, because this is how he predicated this, that this was not a gender
no.
issue. It is an archetypical. Could you talk about
that? Well, yeah. And when I first started out, it was like In Search of the New Compassionate Man.
Mm-mm.
And I thought, wait a second, this is bigger than this. This is In Search of the New Compassionate Male.
Yeah.
And I really believe that that is emerging as a new archetype. You're talking about this energy rising, you know, for us guys, the energy that's coming up that the patriarchy has pushed down, mm-hmm. we're sitting here holding a basketball underwater. That's, you know, how long can you do it? It's going to come up. And it's either going to come up in a productive way or a non-productive mm-hmm. way. And if we can bring it up and integrate that, and so new compassionate male speaks exactly to what you were talking about.
Right.
That we're all in this. Your masculine energy, the new compassionate male within you.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that, because when I speak about the, you know, the divine feminine rising, mm-hmm. a lot of people go, oh, but what about me, you know, as a man? And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Within every single person, there is feminine uh-huh. and there is masculine, whether That's you're right. a woman, whether you're a man, whether you're transgendered, whether you're bisexual, lesbian, gay, I don't care what you are. We all have this nature within us.
And we've been going out to the world as guys with one hand tied behind our back. Yeah. You know, we know how to carry the sword. Mm. But this other hand is the divine femme. It's the hand of compassion.
Right. Right.
In both.
So I'm curious, Clay. I'm so curious how, as a man, you came to this, because did you grow up like this? Did your father teach you this? Did this just arise in you? How did this happen? How did you come to this understanding?
Well, it was, I think, part of my nature growing up, although I couldn't put words to it, and going through the Marine Corps and learning servant leadership and taking servant leadership into the corporation, it all plays to this. It's all, you know, counterintuitive. And so I got out into the corporate world. I climbed the corporate ladder like we all do, got up there, boom, blew up, fell to the bottom. And then I had to come back. Mm. And it was in that coming back that I had to come back and say, okay, what is this hole that's burning inside me? If I don't open that up, if I don't understand that. And I grew up not trusting other men. And so I finally got to a place where, okay, I've got to start a men's circle, but I don't trust men.
Okay.
Well, I got to get over that. And so I figured, if I'm like that, there's got to be other guys out there like that. So let's come together, you know. And I announced it, you know, at our church 3 weeks in a row. Nobody signed up. Nobody. You know,
a lot of people didn't trust you.
Yeah. But the first night, there were a dozen of us. And now we run 25 or 30. We've had 35. We've got people around the world. And it's all these people that have this inside. And they know, you know, Ellen, you and I can work to a certain level, but there's something I got to get from another man. And it can't be this, I'm going to beat you down to get it out of you stuff. No, we're already in our heart. But we're stuck. And we don't know how to get out of that. And that's the work that men have got to do with one another.
Okay, so can I ask you something? I know I can get into interviewing you. And if,
Let's
if
do.
You're not, I just, I'm
it's
just,
all
this
fair.
Is just, okay, good, because I'm just so curious. Because I know that women don't trust one another per se often. And I've never heard this, that men don't trust each other either.
Really?
No, I've never heard this. I always came from the assumption that men, it was the men's club, that men trusted each other.
You know, so, Dennis, somebody else said this to us a week or two ago. And I didn't ever hear that. The women thought the men trusted each other.
Totally. We all make the assumption that you're all off at the men's club, you know, getting together, and that's how you all rise in corporations, and that the women kind of like are off to the side. So what is it that men don't trust about each other?
Well, the patriarchy, it's we've got to climb, you know, and it's the survival of the fittest. It's a lower, you know, level of consciousness. And so I'm still fighting the battle, and it's either you win or I win. We can't both win. It's win-lose, you know. Okay. Well, in the 80s, win-win became popular, but still, it's still evolving. And it's that lower level of thinking of survival of the fittest.
Yeah, now that makes sense to me. Yeah. And as I keep looking at your heart and keep feeling into your heart, I was like, oh, what they don't trust is what my husband always talks about. I don't talk to men about emotional stuff, Ellen. Like, no, thank you. I'll talk to you.
So we grow up without being able to speak that language. And when we get asked a question that asks us to go there, I may go there, but I don't have the vocabulary.
I know. Isn't this the damnest thing? It's like we grow men up in a certain way. Then they get into relationships, and then the woman says, well, how do you feel? And the men are like, fine. I don't know. Whatever, you know. And it's been a real journey between my husband and I about this.
Yep. And this is one of the things, both Ellen and Clay, is that, all right, let's say you turn around to the cat and ask it about about quadratic equations. And the cat kind of looks at you. The thing is that if we do not have the vocabulary, when we do not feel like, I know that when I was a child, I stuttered. And it was stuttered because I couldn't get out the words that I knew that I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a medical stutter. It was just, that was just part of the, as I was learning the vocabulary. So we're having part of what the men's circle has been, and I've been in it since late last year, Ellen, and that we're learning the vocabulary of emotional vulnerability and learning how to say it in a safe environment so that when we come into a different place, we now have already practiced the vocabulary because other than that, we just go, we're like children. So there is a raising we're having to bring our I work with women around the world in my communication practice and as a director and in television and the work that I've done. And the thing is that if we do not have the emotions to be able to speak to it, we're mute. And it brings out frustration.
Okay, so let's do something for the whole world right here, right now.
Okay, is this going to hurt?
No, it's definitely not going to hurt. Okay. Let's just speak to all women right now. And to say, look, if your husband, your lover, your boyfriend cannot communicate with you, it is not because they don't love you. It's because they don't have the words. They don't know how to say, I'm confused, I'm frustrated, I'm sorry, I'm hurting, because we haven't offered them up. Send them to Clay's circle. Send them here to listen, because I know. Now, my husband and I have worked really, really intensely. I mean, being married to me would be hard. I have to be honest. No, I'm serious. I demand
peace,
a lot.
Piece of work. I promise I'm with you, Ellen.
I mean, but I also, it's because I demand a lot. I want you to grow, keep growing, keep growing. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like in the deep end. I'm just like, you know, doggy paddling, trying to stay my head up. And when I finally got that one day, because I really know my husband loves me, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
I got that it wasn't because he didn't want to connect. It was because he didn't know how.
Let me share something with you about that. When you said, let's speak to all women.
Yeah.
I had this well up inside me, this feeling, and I was choking up on it, you know, because I didn't have the words, but I had the feeling of wanting to express, and I don't know how to say it, you know. And that's what we're doing in the circle. We've got a bunch of grown men,
right?
But we're nurturing one another.
Oh.
We get to sit there without judgment. No one's trying to call anybody out or fix anybody. And we're practicing. And I say what's in my heart. And people hold space for me. And life happens. Life happens. I mean, we've had death experiences. We've had, you know, and we come together because we can connect down here. Even though we can't speak it necessarily, we feel the energy of the heart. And then as we get to that trust begins to grow, we're able to speak it. And we get do-overs, you know? Like, oh, that didn't sound right. Let me try that again. No judgment.
Exactly.
No judgment. It's a safe space. for us to begin to build that vocabulary. And that's what I needed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what else can we do, right?
Right.
As humans, except for keep trying, keep learning, keep doing
exactly.
do-overs, and bringing a beautiful openness with our hearts, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there is really nothing else to do except for practicing life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I often think about why they call practices practices. You know, one day somebody asked me, how long have you been in practice? And I thought, it really struck me. And I thought, oh, I've been practicing for a really long time, guys, you know? I mean,
it's a scary word, isn't it?
It is, because it's so often the way our educational system is set up is that you don't get do-overs. You don't get the opportunity to keep trying, because the system, and I pray that this pandemic is the opening, an open door into new ways of learning.
Exactly.
You know, because the system, the way it's set up now, it only works for a certain amount of the population.
Yep.
You know, if you happen to learn in a certain way, and I remember I had the opportunity to go to one of the best high schools in our country. And it's in a town called Brookline, Massachusetts, where I grew up. And I remember one day a teacher said to me, listen, what I'm interested in is not you getting this right or wrong. I'm interested in you learning critical thinking.
Hmm.
Whoa. I was like, what's critical thinking? You know, because our educational system is right or wrong, yes or no, true or false. And it doesn't examine how do you actually think.
Mm.
And if we really offered that to people, I mean, I think the creativity in this country would go skyrocketing out of this, you know, out of sight.
Yes.
And we would be able to critically think, like right now we're in a pandemic where we need to be able to use all of our resources to critically think. And a lot of people do not have those resources.
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
but it's I think it is a dormant muscle that just has not been, it's there.
Absolutely.
So now it's let's go into that gym and pick up the 1-pounders.
Yeah.
Let's just work on the 1-pounders, and then don't. So somebody's over there with 400 pounds doing. I don't care. 1-pounders. Let's just begin to work that process. We both so agree with you. This is such with all the horrible things that people are going through, the challenges. This is an opportunity to make a systemic change.
Absolutely.
Clay and I have been talking about, this is an actual demonstration of when a system, the patriarchy, takes it as far as it can and becomes toxic for everyone, men, female, just that as a system, when you just take a system, now we must replace it. Something has to replace it. And this is where we are working on doing our part in working on the new compassionate male, so that whatever the system will be, that we show up better equipped, more open-minded, open-hearted, and supportive in this process, because we can be more effective together than we could possibly be if we were just out there in a vector of the maleness.
You know,
absolutely.
Ellen, the I witnessed this across the United States last year, and I witnessed it in Kenya with the young men that I worked with over there. This same burn is in them. The same thing that we're talking about is there. This is worldwide.
Yes.
It expresses a little bit differently, but Dennis, I like the way you talk about the pandemic as like the water level coming down and exposing the rocks.
Yes.
They were there all along.
But now we got to deal with the rocks.
Yes. And what I also want to say, though, because people have their experiences, and then they take their experiences and they project onto a new experience, their experiences. So, so I want to talk about something that happened recently to me. We have a neighborhood Facebook group, and I did not agree. I don't agree with the current thinking in our city, which is the city of Seattle, about defunding the police department. And I knew as I posted this, I was like, Ellen, you're going to, you know, bring on the wrath towards yourself. And I was like, well, all right. And I really was up in arms about this. And one of the first people to respond, she had been abused by the police, and now she is married to a black man. And it brought everything up. And as I sat with it, you know, my first reaction was to, of course, you know, tell her I was sorry for her trauma, because she clearly needs that to be witnessed. Mm-hmm. And then I said to her, I said, look, I too have experienced trauma like you, but it was at the flesh of my own father's hands. And if I took my experience with one man and I then impose that onto all men, it would be a mistake, because not every man is my father. Right. And she hasn't, in my esteemed observation, hasn't yet gone far enough in her own healing process, because the first 7 years of my healing process was I raged for 7 years. Mm-hmm. Thank God I lived in New York City and had a kick-ass therapist, right, who could allow me that space to just rage. But you can't stay there. And if we all stay enraged, then we stay separate. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I believe that going forward, we have to begin to give voice to all that is inside of us and are offered spaces. You know, I really have a dream where I see these huge mammoth fields where people are allowed to go and rage. And then when they are done, when it's all come out, we have teams that either put you to bed or teams to just hold you in a way that is appropriate, that doesn't ask anything of you, that people have been trained to do these things. This has been a dream I have had since I've been a little girl. And so for anybody listening to this, what I want to say is, if you've had an experience where you've been hurt, so if you're a man and you've been hurt by women, please, let's not take that forward into every relationship. Let's find spaces where you get to rage, you get to scream it out, you get to shout it out, you get to cry it out, you get to have your fear, you get to have your grief. If you're a woman who has been hurt by a man, let's do the same. And then I think we can really begin to have a new conversation about, how do we trust one another? Not just man to man, but man to woman, woman to woman, man. You know, because listening to you today, I think we've become a people who don't trust, because we have so much unresolved.
Absolutely.
Minutia that hangs out in our heart space that we close it up.
Mm-hmm.
We build walls. You know, and I think what you're doing is about slowly and carefully bringing the walls down so that we can begin to really, you know, connect heart to heart.
You know, thank you for saying that. Yeah. In our circle, no one really leads it. I don't teach anything. You know, I'm not a professional practicer, but I help create the space. And I've said this almost every time we get on a podcast, but we get 20 guys in that circle, give or take.
Yeah.
There's over 1,000 life years of experience right there.
Right.
And there's something that we can learn from one another. And if we come in there with the right intent, there is no place that we can go except for up and together.
Yeah.
We have that knowledge, And if we can create the space for that, and then as we come up, now we're prepared to engage with that conversation and do like what you're talking about with men and women connecting. But that's the work that men have got to do with one another.
Absolutely. I want to ask a question of you, Ellen. When you made that Facebook post, what was going on inside of you as to before you hit that send button? And how did you deal? Because most of us are wanting to have, we would love to be able to have that conversation with people with whom we do either do not identify or cannot see what their perspective is and be able to still step into it. So give us some of your experience, strength, and hope in that.
Okay. So I knew it's a hot topic in Seattle right now. So I knew that. I also knew that I had a burning desire to speak to it. And I knew that right now, it's defunding police has become wired with Black Lives Matter. And I think that's very unfortunate because, like I said before, if one person has an experience of being, say, abused by the police, it does not mean that all police are bad.
No, but how did you, what I'm asking is to get the courage to not only just to say it, but what I want to do is to be able to build bridges and conversations. I have a particular feeling because I am a center left progressive. I feel like that the best we could possibly do is to build up a strong center right, really to have people with conservative principles who have and make them strong and visible and help me knock off the things that I think are just such a good idea that maybe there's a better idea if we could be able to have that. But in order to do that, we have to have the conversations.
Absolutely.
And that's what so impressed me. Yeah. That's what so impressed me about what you did. You were willing to enter into that conversation and willing to stand up and to be able to say. And so that's what helped us.
Okay. I wish I could tell you how I have courage, because courage is something that I have gained in having to stand up to a 6'3", 365-foot man who was never held accountable for any actions that he ever did. So at 5 foot nothing, I lived in a time where women and children were not protected. I lived in one of the most affluent towns in our country, and I didn't have a mother who could protect me because she was too abused herself and too mentally ill. And I had to protect, or I felt like I had to protect my siblings who were too young and too little. I feel that God has blessed me beyond blessings. I feel my courage to stand up and tell my truth has been there since I was a little being. I people ask me all this time, how do you have the courage to say the things you do? I don't know that I have an answer for that. I know that I have a desire to empower people to become their best. And I know that that takes having really tough conversations. And I've learned that there isn't always going to be somebody else. We have to be that somebody else. And so I have always had a sense of what was right and what was wrong in my heart. And even though I was being beaten, whether verbally beaten or physically beaten, I still knew what was right and what was wrong in my heart. And just, I don't know, I was a mighty little one that said, no, this will not be okay. Mm. And so somehow I think through that experience of having to stand up and be the one to change my family dynamic, I learned that it was better to be courageous than to be loved. That's a hard one. Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was better to be courageous than to watch people who I loved be beaten. So having tough conversations is nothing compared to that.
It is. Did you have to go through the process of de-objectifying men, separating men from your father and saying not all men are the same way that you're talking about the police, the same way that Clay, that we're talking about it in the men's circle and trying to rebuild this?
Yes. So here's what was very fortunate is that even as a small child, I asked myself the question, why would a man who loved me, and believe me, you won't believe this, I knew he loved me.
No, but I do. I do believe it. Or are you kidding? Child of an alcoholic, Clay having challenges in his, are you kidding? We do.
So I knew that this man loved me. So it brought me to the next question. If this man loved me, and he can do this to me, and this to my mother, and this to my brother, what is wrong with him? Why? What makes somebody to do this? And yeah. I was a writer, so from a very little age, I kept journals. I still have them, thank goodness. And I would draw pictures of men. And they would be very sinister men and then really lovely, happy men. And later on in life, I realized that through my journaling, I was expressing the different faces of the father.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate in that I had a great grandfather who was a very gentle soul. And while nobody knew, per se, what was going on, he was a great teacher for me. Mm. And I was visited by angels since I've been a little girl. I don't often talk about this. But that guidance, that connection to God, you know, I was born with a connection to God that is just unbelievable. I could scream at God and rage at God and say, where are you? What are you doing? And then, because it often seemed like as soon as I prayed to God to come, things would get worse. And I'd say, what, where are you? You know, like, and people often say to me, how can you scream at God? And I'm like, hey, listen, people, if I can't scream at God, he's not a God I want to know. Right? I mean, you have to. If the God is the God I know in my heart, my screaming is nothing compared to what he knows, right? If that kind of love can't hold my rage and my frustration and my anger, then it's not a God I want to know. Hmm. And I guess to answer, Dennis, your question, I knew I was going to cry at some point as soon as I felt you guys.
We all will.
Is that love for me is bigger than my discomfort.
Mm.
So if we have to have an uncomfortable conversation, I know in my heart that the love that we share as human beings, whether you're a man, whether you're a woman, regardless of your ethnicity, regardless of your religion, is that as a human being to a human being, we share one thing in common, and that is love in our heart. Now, it may be hard to sometimes get to. We may put all sorts of blocks up between us. We may say, you're red, I'm white, you're black, I'm blue, you're yellow, I'm white. We may say, you're Catholic, I'm Jewish, you're Muslim, I'm a Jew. In the end, what I see all over the world, no matter where I have gone, no matter who I've talked to, is that if we can really just sit and feel one another's heart, there is no conversation that is going to be too difficult. So pause. I don't know if that answers your question.
What it does, it better than answers the question. because it's so much, what you've opened me up is to the courage for me to have the conversations. You've opened me up to action. You've opened me up to being willing to step into that uncomfortable place and move up, because both of your example and your beautiful storytelling, as it is, I'm. God, this is fun.
Oh. This is just so, it is.
You know, it's something, Ellen, in telling what you're telling and doing the tough stuff like that, because there's a deep love. I'm coming to understand that what you're talking about is love in action.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way of describing compassion.
Is
love in action.
Exactly. And one of the big places that we're talking about, exactly as you're talking about, is that compassion means that I have to work on myself first. Because unless I am willing to be compassionate toward Dennis, unless I'm willing to get in there and do the hard work, because I tend to objectify my internal reality so that all the things that I feel insecure about myself, I project upon others. I project upon other situations, and then I'm the victim.
Yeah. So there's, I think that would be a great answer to the question of courage. Is the first place of courage was the courage for me to open to a reality that I had hidden from myself. And it is amazing to me what we can hide inside of ourselves. So if you had met me at 26, right before I got ill, and you had asked me, Ellen, you know, tell me a little bit about your family, I would have said, oh, I come from a nice Jewish family, and sometimes we go to, you know, temple on Friday nights, and we laugh a lot, and my father is very charismatic and very funny, and you would love him the moment he'd step in the door. And my mom is brilliant and beautiful, and I have four other siblings.
And they all, and that all would have been true.
It was true. And then you would pick up my book today and read it, and you'd be like, whoa, what just happened, right? And in order for me to get from that reality to writing the book, it took like 34 years of therapy. And I remember the first time I saw a therapist, and she began to ask me questions that I was uncomfortable with, and I'd squirm, and you know, and I was living in New York City at the time, so we could be bold and say, you know, I'm really not into that question today, and you know, and I just kept, you know, moving around. And she said, Ellen, could you just do me one favor? And I said, sure. She said, could you just sit still for one moment? And I was like, yeah, whatever, lady. And I said, sure. And I sat still, and she looked in my eyes in a way I will never forget, like looking through into my soul. And I just burst, and I was so confused, you guys. I didn't understand what was happening. My world was like breaking in that moment. And it took a long time to begin to understand what I had done to survive was to create a life that I could live with, you know. And as we broke through the layers of the stories that I had hidden even from myself, I mean, I really didn't do very well. I definitely had a breakdown on my way to my breakthrough. And it was so difficult because this happened in the mid-1980s in the middle of New York City. And there was not a lot of people I could talk to. I didn't understand. I couldn't compare my notes with people. I had to quit work. I couldn't breathe. I mean, then I, once I sort of was coming through that, I then couldn't leave my house. So the work was so confronting. And I love my parents. And how do you make sense out of a world that, here you'd put a veneer that was working and a smile, and that all worked. And then you take those pieces away and you have to find the shards of glass that it literally feel like they cut you, your soul being, to nothing. And then how do you begin to go through that and then patch it up together? So that's
it feels like that's what we're going through in the United States of America today. Exactly what you just described. Mm-hmm. That we've taken the facade away. We as men and women and all of us are coming together to say, what are we really about? What are we, and this role of compassion, Clay, that you're talking about, and the role of compassion for being able to look at one another and look with one another.
Isn't that interesting? I love, Dennis, how you said that. Maybe that's why this time is not uncomfortable for me, because it mimics where I've already been, right? And as a nation, we are breaking down. We're in breakdown. Yes. But the good news is I am beyond hopeful. I'm beyond hopeful.
It feels it. Oh my God, it is. Right? I am so inspired by you. Oh, I'm so inspired just being around you. This is great. And I am the blooming optimist of blooming optimists, and you're taking me further.
Yay! I mean, for anybody who's listening, please don't buy into the breakdown. That's all I want to say.
Amen.
Have to go through this. It's a necessary part of the healing. But I am beyond hopeful for the new world that we're all in the midst of creating. And you guys, what you guys are doing, I was so excited to be on this today because I love what you're doing. I so love it. And I'm very excited once the pandemic is over and you get to travel again. I cannot wait to see all the places that you're going to go to and all the men you're going to talk to. And then I see another group where the men and the women get together and have a whole conversations. And I'm putting it out there that I want to be part of that next iteration because I see that. I see an infinity sign for the men's groups and the women's groups getting together and that conversation being held within an infinity sign itself.
Yes.
So, yes, I am so hopeful. I see a new world arising. I really do. And I know right now many people are scared. And for that, let's talk to that because, you know, people don't like to talk about scared and grief and fear and sadness. And, you know, I've been sitting in a lot of grief. Because my mom passed away. Oh, my apologies one more time. My mom passed away. Maybe that's a call from heaven.
I thought so. That's exactly. I mean, it was right on cue. Did you hear the cue? I mean, the cue, it was like.
I'm telling you, I take it.
We're not editing that out.
No, please don't. I think that is so beautiful. I love it. So my mom passed away June 10th from complications of COVID. And So I've been sitting in a lot of grief. I am not sorry that she had to die now. She was suffering from both Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. So we would have eventually gotten there. COVID just got her there quicker.
Exactly.
And what I want to say about grief is whether you have had somebody who has recently passed from COVID, whether you are grieving a loss of your job, or you're just even grieving not being able to hug your friends. Man, I have grieved over that this whole time because I am a hugger, right? Mm-hmm. Dennis, you and I and Clay, we'd be hugging, right?
Yep.
Being hugging, right? I mean, I really miss that connection, and it's an important connection. But I really want to open a conversation for both men and women. Let's make a new rule that grieving is not a bad thing. Mm. It's a beautiful thing. It's such a necessary part of the journey. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, in the new world, I think emotions are going to be okay with everybody. And, yes, you know, to allow that conversation, because we do need to grieve. We need to grieve our history. We need to grieve what's the demise of the patriarchy, because we've known that for a very long time. We need to grieve the systems that are breaking down. And in our grief, if we could really allow it, I know at the end of a really good cry, I feel so relieved. And I often even get to a place where I'm laughing. And, you know, that in and of itself is an expression, is a release, right? And I feel like, in a way, we hold up so much in our country. You know, we keep holding it up, holding it up, holding it up. I want to say, people, let's let it down. Let's let this burden of machismo down. Because it's not just men that have the machismo, I can't cry, you know. I see people, most of my people work in the corporate world. They will call me and say, Ellen, I'm going to call you in 5 minutes. I'm going outside. And I'm like, all right. And they'll get outside and the tears will come. And I'm like, girl, you're okay. Or guy, you're okay. Like, just let it out. We'll just talk in a moment. Let it out. But there's no room for this, you know, in the corporate world. We don't allow for people to just be human.
All right. So let me stop you there for 1 second.
All right.
Can we rephrase that or just say so far? Because
so far,
I'm seeing inklings. I'm seeing shards go through in different parts. I'm working with a major Fortune big company, and one of the senior vice presidents quit because she wasn't being heard.
Mm-hmm.
They fired her boss the next day because they lost this huge talent because of what they had, just because it wasn't being heard. And what there are shards that are happening, and I know it because so many of the courageous people that I get a chance to work with in the corporate world have your courage, and they're, and the way they're working, they're willing to stand up. There are more voices than we've ever seen before, and we're at that top tipping point. We don't want to quit one step before.
Oh, absolutely not. And what I think is great is that, like, you're working inside of corporations, I work outside, but with very big players and middle manager players. And I say to them, now I allowed you to do this. Now you allow your employees to do this, right? And that's how it's going to change, by the work you're doing, Dennis, by the work you're doing, Clay, by the work I'm doing with individuals, right?
Exactly.
Is that every time we allow and we open a space for one person to step through, for 25 men to step through, for a group that you're working with, Dennis, to step through, that's how the change is going to happen.
You know, I agree. I agree. A thought comes to mind. You were talking about the demise of the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. I don't think that means that's the demise of men.
Oh, God, no.
God, no.
No, that's just the beginning.
And that's it. But when I hear that, because I've bolted, somebody's coming, well, come talk with us because we're talking about the, you know, the demise, the death of the patriarchy. And I took offense. Hmm. And I'm not a patriarchal guy, but that was my natural reaction because, oh, that's a threat to me because I'm a privileged white male that I've been through.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
But that was my initial reaction. But then I come back and say, no.
Okay.
The death of the patriarchy is not the death of the man.
No, actually.
And I was just so proud of you. I'm proud of you for Clay for doing that. And that's where we're bringing it to you, that it isn't a threat, and helping us to reframe it to understand.
Okay. So here's what I want to say. If I wish I had a little model of the yin-yang.
We're watching. We're watching. See it. We can see it in your hand. There it is. It's perfect.
All right. So for people who may not be familiar with the yin-yang, on the top would be a black symbol, and on the bottom would be more of a gray or a white symbol, and everything around would be white. And then in the middle, there would be a little dot. And we all, whether you're a woman or whether you're a man, we all live by this principle. And this principle was described thousands of years ago in the old texts of the Oriental medicine texts and the philosophers in the Nanjing period, okay? And what it says is that the yin affects the yang, and the yang affects the yin. So if we put it in terms, English terms, the feminine affects the masculine. Mm-hmm. The masculine affects the feminine. So when we have an unhealthy masculine, which is what we're seeing in this patriarchy today, it affects the feminine in an unhealthy way. Then the unhealthy feminine affects the unhealthy masculine. And so, as we see a new healthy masculine arise, it benefits everybody. It benefits white men, it benefits black men, it benefits white women, it benefits black women, it benefits all people of color, it benefits people of every gender. So why do I say that? I say that because even though we could say, let's say we're a white male and people can point a finger and say, but you're winning. You're winning right now.
I have all my life, Ellen, all my life, I've always been on the first of the line. I have understood and recognized my white male privilege and upper middle class environment and all the things. I recognize it at the depths. So you're talking directly to me.
Good. So you know from lived experience that even though you were winning, you were part of the population that was winning.
Always.
You don't win totality. You don't win in totality. What do I mean by that? I mean by that is that your heart paid a price for what you won. Okay?
Yes.
All right. So if...
Let me show you my scar.
His actual scar that took him on this part of the journey, Ellen.
Yeah. So did you have a heart attack?
Yep.
So our bodies pay a price. Mm-hmm. In fact, let's talk about that, Clay, this morning. Now, for those of you who know me, you know I don't watch the news or don't read it much since February, because I just had enough. However, since I got a little bit of reprieve on vacation, I came back and I've been poking in a little bit, just a little bit, not a lot, but just this morning I poked in to NBC News, front page, 800 people are now being quarantined in Georgia with the opening of the schools. Why? Why? This is unavoidable. Because we have an egoic, unhealthy egoic male structure that says, no, 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 I know better. No, 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 I'm not going to listen to common sense. I know better. And I want people to see this not from a place of judgment, because my first place was like, oh, why?
Yeah.
I mean, like, duh, of course. And then I got over myself and I said, all right, Ellen, what do you think? Here's what I think. I think anybody that would make that initial decision comes from a place of such deep insecurity.
Fear.
And fear. Because all arrogance resides itself in insecurity and fear. So, first of all, I want to say, as we look at and discuss the demise of the patriarchy, I want to send love to anybody still caught in that structure, to the people who made the decision in Georgia after I got over my judgment and my anger. I want to send you love, because I know that there is something wrong, that you would put your children at risk. And when we're willing to put children and society at risk the way we do so often these days, there's something systemically wrong. And when we're out of balance that much, then nobody wins. So we are in. So for those people who are afraid of what's going on right now, no, 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 don't be frightened. Please look at at everything that's breaking down, knowing that something much healthier is being born, and healing is really, really, really messy. It's ugly. It doesn't look pretty. You know, it's got sad, sad tears. It's bad looking. But what comes next is incredible beauty. So I think we're moving into such a beautiful time.
Ellen, thank you. Clay, thank you. That was magnificent. Thank you, everybody, and we will see you next time.